Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's especially a pleasure to be on this panel. And you know, when I first started researching this topic, it was earlier last year, and my colleague Jim Mosier approached me to write this report, and this was before I knew about Mary Claire's research, and it was actually after our report came out that her research did. So this is an evolving topic, and it's especially important to understand how these products are being marketed and what we can do about them from a policy perspective. So this is a report that is available. I will be giving you some highlights, but also updating you. But the full report is available on the Marin Institute website, which is simply marininstitute.org. And if you're not familiar with us, we are an alcohol industry watchdog group that really works to keep the alcohol industry in check and promote policy solutions to marketing to youth and in general. So what I want to do is talk to you about what I call the three-point plan for marketing to youth. And it's really important to understand that the name of the game here is to create brand confusion among the alcoholic beverages and their non-alcoholic counterparts. The second part of the plan is to provide a cheap alternative. So when Dr. O'Brien was talking about mixing your own, you know, Red Bull has really been the company to promote this idea of mixing alcohol with highly caffeinated soft drinks. And so the companies like Miller saw this happening and thought, well, we've got a better idea. Let's, you know, do the mixing for you, put it in a can that looks just like a soft drink and charge you a lot less money than you'd pay for a pre-mixed, for a mixed drink in the bar. The third, of course, is deploying at all opportunities youth-friendly marketing tactics. So the context here, again, is the soft drinks. So the exploding popularity of non-alcoholic energy drinks started several years back. This is just to give you some idea of what that looks like, $3.2 billion in sales. That's an old figure. It's surpassed that by now. And by far, the target audience for this is young people. So, and that is borne out by all kinds of research. One in three teens use energy drinks compared to one in 10 adults. So again, this is thinking about the soft drinks. The target market is teenagers, and it's rapidly increasing. And the earlier question, there is some science about the impact of these highly caffeinated beverages that is emerging, and it's just something that we really have to pay attention to aside from the problem with mixing with alcohol. The fact that young people are drinking these highly caffeinated beverages is a problem in and of itself. And of course, the types of marketing strategies to get kids to drink these beverages are all about rebellion, about drugs. There's a product out there called cocaine. I mean, you can't get any more blatant than that. So now going to thinking about this mixing of alcohol, I like to use this slide to give an example of the product confusion. So, I mean, by now people started to get, when I did this last year, people, most people didn't know, but can anyone just offhand tell me at a quick glance, you know, which of these products contain alcohol? Sparks, right? See, people know about Sparks because you already talked about Sparks. So, all right. So, but you can see the obvious. You know, this is my green and black scheme to show how these products look so similar. The other three do not contain alcohol, and then this is my orange and red family of products, where these three products contain alcohol, and we'll talk more about Tilt in a minute. But you can see the obvious. I mean, you know, you ask, most clerks can't tell the difference. Parents certainly can't tell the difference. We've even had reports of youth themselves going into the store attempting to buy a soft drink and by accident buying the alcoholic beverage. So clearly these products all look alike on purpose. And then, you know, the other strategy here that's really important to understand is this idea of youth-friendly marketing. And you can't get any more youth-friendly than viral marketing or internet marketing. And this is just a quote from the inventor of Sparks, and there is a guy who thought this was a great idea. And so he says how they spent a lot of money on internet-related activities. We invited customers to post comments to their website, which was very successful, and basically create this whole viral marketing on the internet. And so we researched the internet to find the result of this, and it was very successful. You go on Facebook, you find the chat groups, all of these chat groups obviously promoting the use of Sparks in ways that the company intends. And if you ask them, they might say, well, we didn't put that up on Facebook, but they put the whole thing in motion. And that's what's important to understand. And we're picking on Sparks because Miller has been able to popularize this product. And here's another example. These are two posts on Facebook by self-identified high schoolers. And one of them said, I'm only 18, had a six-pack of Sparks in my room, mom found it, she had no idea and thought they were just, and it's just their spelling, energy drinks. And then this other quote, I don't remember what life was like before Sparks, but now I really can't remember with it. And, you know, it's cute, but it's not really so funny when they're getting into this kind of trouble that Dr. O'Brien was talking about. And then, of course, this other product, which is less popular, called Liquid Charge, uses sex to sell, which is always a good tactic. So we did a little bit of a look at price comparison, and it usually surprises people when we tell them that the alcoholic brands are often less expensive than the non-alcoholic soft drinks. So this is just a couple of examples we bought in our area in Northern California of Rockstar Sparks Tilt being about 25% less than three soft drinks. And so obviously, I mean, if a kid who's only got, you know, $1.59 in his pocket is thinking, well, should I buy the soft drink or should I get a little more, you know, bang for my buck? Why not buy the alcoholic version? And now, you know, we have these new products coming out. This one that Dr. Bryan mentioned, Juice, which, I mean, is so offensive on many levels. It's hard to even know where to begin. So, you know, more alcohol, more content, meaning more caffeine. And this is a quote from the company who owns the product. A little bit of mango, a little bit of papaya, and a little bit of lightning. So clearly what they're going for there. And then so some more price results, including this product. We just did a statewide survey of retail outlets, and this is just some preliminary results. And so this is, again, confirming that on average, Sparks was about $2 compared to Monster, and now Red Bull comes in 16 ounces as well, which is a lot more, as it turns out. Red Bull is charging over $3 for its product. So you can see that difference. And then looking at Juice, which you have to compare, you know, the product for 23 ounces is $2.36, which is already cheaper than the Red Bull. But if you compare it to a 16-ounce product, I mean, it's as cheap as $1.61. And then we just did a calculation to look at a price per ounce of alcohol. And again, because Juice is so high in alcohol, it turns out to be the best value by far is to buy the 23-ounce can of Juice, only $1 per ounce of alcohol compared to $2 even for Sparks. And we'll be coming out with more of those kinds of results from that survey. So public health implications, Dr. Bryan already kind of hit the nail on the head. Obviously, we do not want people who are drunk to be awake, right? If they're going to get drunk, the best thing is for them to just pass out and not do any harm to anyone else, and obviously, hopefully, awaken. But the point is, we don't want people who are drunk to be driving and getting in trouble, et cetera. And that's exactly what the problem is with these products. This is the science that Dr. Bryan's already mentioned, but I think it's important to emphasize that we have strong evidence that youth who are drinking these products are getting into trouble, that they tend to drink more, that they have more episodes of drunkenness, and then this is the slide that you should remember about the effects of this, which is that youth who consume alcohol with energy drinks are twice as likely to be hurt or injured, require medical attention, ride with an intoxicated driver, be taken advantage sexually, or take advantage of someone else sexually. That is the best science we have about the effects of this. And obviously, there's more coming out, but this is really important. So I want to talk about what can be done. This is, you know, sort of my baby work at Marin Institute. We're really promoting strong policy change in this area. And I can't emphasize enough that this doesn't have to be. And most of the media reporting on this topic has been focused on education and retail outlets and, you know, law enforcement. And that's important, of course. I mean, it's always important to look at those strategies. But, you know, we think that there is no room on the shelf for this product. There should be no reason to be mixing caffeine with alcohol. This is inherently dangerous. We want these products off the market. And so there are different strategies to get to that place. We think there should be statewide bans. There is no reason a legislature could not take this up. We're starting to see this happen already. State attorneys general have been very active in this area, and that is the good news. And if you live in a state where you already know that your attorney general has been writing letters to Miller and Anheuser-Busch on this, then you should thank him and encourage him or her to continue that. If you're in a, unfortunately, it's been about half the states. I mean, that's good. Fortunately, there's been about half the states that have had active attorney generals on this, but the others haven't. And so if you're in a state where you haven't seen your attorney general sign on to one of these letters, you need to ask that person why, and you need to show them Dr. O'Brien's research and say, this is not acceptable, we need to change this. So putting pressure on the companies. Miller is really our target right now because unlike Anheuser-Busch, which has pulled Tilt, its main product, and Bud Extra, Miller is digging its heels deep in and has said, no, 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 we want to keep making these products and, you know, thumbing their noses at the AGs and the rest of us. And so if, you know, you can take action by asking Miller directly. We have actions on our website, as do other organizations, about this. Juice is this other product that's been mentioned. There are a couple other smaller company products that it's not clear, you know, how widespread they are, but obviously they're still a problem, which is why we think the product should be banned in general and not just go after one brand at a time. The taxation issue, I'll explain. So it is rather confusing, but basically what's going on is these companies are pretending that these products are beer, when obviously they don't taste like beer. I encourage you, I mean, if you ever tried a can of Spar, I don't encourage you to drink the whole thing, but I do encourage you to taste Sparks, it tastes like soda. So Sparks is all orange flavored, tastes like an orange crush soda, does not taste like beer. But the industry has finagled the system to get these products classified as beer, which is what enables them to sell them everywhere beer can be sold, which is what makes them so widely available to youth. Youth are the ones who shop in convenience stores, and what keeps the prices low. So the reason that Sparks can be sold at only $1.59 is because the taxes are the lowest on beer. If they were classified as distilled spirits, as they should be, then the taxes would go up significantly and they couldn't be charging such dirt cheap prices. So that's why it's important to look at that issue, and that's something we have done in California successfully. And I want to say that taking action works, and here's just some examples. So as I mentioned, a number of state attorneys general have been on this topic. They put enough pressure on Anheuser-Busch Anheuser-Busch agreed to reformulate. We're not sure what that means yet, but basically they've agreed to stop mixing caffeine with alcohol, and that's a really good thing. They have been putting pressure on Miller. While they haven't backed down completely, Miller was poised to put out a new product called Sparks Red, which is 8% alcohol, and because of all the pressure and bad publicity, they've said, well, okay, we'll hold back on that for now. We're not sure what they're going to do with that product. The other thing that has happened in June, the Center for Science and the Public Interest has filed a lawsuit, and this is against Miller for its product Sparks, and they filed that in the District of Columbia on two grounds. One, deception. This is based on state consumer protection law, saying that these products are deceptive to consumers because they promote this idea that caffeine and alcohol is a good thing. And secondly, on the grounds of adulteration. So this idea that these components to the product, like caffeine and taurine and all this other crap that they put in there, is basically should not be in an alcoholic beverage. And we have a situation, unfortunately, where our federal government is kind of asleep at the wheel and just sort of blindly approving these products. But that doesn't mean it has to be that way at the state level. And so it's important to understand that states do have authority to enforce the law and say, you know what, we don't think these products are good. We don't want them in our state. And there's different strategies for doing that. And so the Attorney General in New Mexico has decided that the strategy he would like to see is legislation. And so just last week, he actually proposed two different types of legislation, one to completely ban the whole line of alcoholic energy drinks in the state of New Mexico, and the other is to tax alcopops in general. So alcopops are this broader category of sweetened alcoholic beverages, and the idea there is to, like I said earlier, get them taxed at the distilled spirits rate. So New Mexico is being bold in taking this initiative, and recently as well, Utah has passed legislation to get alcopops, again, this broader category, out of the convenience stores to be sold only in the state-run liquor stores. And it looks like in Utah, that's going to mean that the products go away completely. And that's obviously a very good outcome. Now, I always don't like to really point to Utah as a great example because there's such an unusual state where they tend to just have different attitudes about alcohol. But, you know, we're always happy to have any state take this on. And what happened in California, we actually went through a regulatory process where we convinced our state taxing board, the Board of Equalization, to properly tax alcopops as distilled spirits. And that process is still being fought by industry, and the other state that's done it is Maine. And so this is a state-by-state process, and what I want to show you is this list of states in which alcopops are basically currently being misclassified. So if your state is on this list, it means that alcopops, including alcoholic energy drinks, are currently being sold as beer, taxed as beer, but the law actually says they should be taxed and sold as distilled spirits. And I know that sounds confusing. Well, how can the law not be followed? Well, it's basically because industry has convinced regulators to classify these products as beer. And the federal government has created sort of this compromise which allows it to happen. But state law is different, and I can't emphasize this enough. States under the 21st Amendment have unique authority to regulate alcohol. And it's really important to not let the feds guide us on this issue because they've got it wrong. And in these states, these products can be taxed at the higher rate of distilled spirits. But beyond that, every state could pass a law to completely ban these products. So basically what we want is twofold. One is to have the entire product line of alcoholic energy drinks completely banned, either have industry voluntarily stop doing it like Anheuser-Busch has, or more likely through lawsuit or through legislation, get states to say, we don't want these products in our borders because they're dangerous. The other is to have the broader category of alcopops. So that means Smirnoff Ice, Mike's Hard Lemonade, all these sweetened products, which we know target youth, especially young girls. We want those taxed and sold properly so that they will at least be out of reach of young people, because we know how sensitive young people are to price. And we know that the two biggest factors for addressing underage drinking are price and availability. And industry knows that too, which is why they're playing these games. So that's kind of all I have. I really want to emphasize that Marin Institute is engaged in this effort to get states to work with us to create a coalition to try to really take on this issue at the state legislature level. New Mexico has taken the bold step to go out there, and we're happy to work with other states to coordinate that. We actually have developed some model legislative language, and so you don't have to start from scratch. We have done a lot of the work for you, so I really encourage you to get in touch with me. We can talk later, email me, send us a smoke signal, anything to work on this important topic, and be happy to take any questions you might have. Yes, in the back. Good question. So, I used to work in food, and I was kind of blown away to come over to work in alcohol to find out that you had this thing called the 21st Amendment. And the wording of it is very clear. So after Prohibition, the idea was, okay, we're not going to make alcohol legal anymore as a federal matter. We're going to leave it up to the states. And actually, right after Prohibition, there were still a number of states who remained dry. So there is this history that says states have independent authority to regulate alcohol. Now, that doesn't mean that the Commerce Clause, which is what requires there to be some uniformity in interstate business, doesn't mean that the Commerce Clause doesn't apply at all. And there's actually a battle going on a number of state regulations challenging state authority. But there was a Ninth Circuit case recently that affirmed, and even the Supreme Court recently has affirmed the 21st Amendment by saying states still have authority regardless of the Commerce Clause, regardless of this idea of, you know, one nation of uniformity to do business, that states have independent authority. So there is no preemption. I mean, it's when it comes to states banning products or states taxing differently, I mean, states are allowed to say, we don't want these types of products. I mean, you have dry counties still. We don't have any completely dry states, but we still have a number of dry counties. So it comes from this idea that local city counties and states have independent authority to regulate alcohol. Yes. I would describe it as the caffeine creates the illusion that that the effect of alcohol is negated, but it doesn't in reality. So the concern is that one feels more awake, one thinks that they can get in a car and drive, but the effects of alcohol are still there, just like they would be without the caffeine. That's right.
Is that
okay? Although it should be noted that the increased alcohol-related consequences in our research statistically accounted for the increased amount of alcohol that was consumed in those who had alcohol mixed with energy drinks. So there is some portion of the an effect that is associated with the caffeine, but what that is and how it works, we don't really know. I think it's also important to understand that caffeine and alcohol are metabolized very differently. So everybody that drinks coffee in the morning knows you have a cup of coffee at 8. By 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you need another cup of coffee, about 4 or 5 hours in the average person. But alcohol, because it's metabolized in a steady fashion, little bit, every hour, 20 milligrams, or depending on how your liver is and what medicines you're on, your gender, et cetera, the caffeine wears off first. So these kids are able to drink extraordinary amounts of alcohol. When the caffeine wears off, they're still really loaded. And that's what the problem is, too.
I think time for one more.
I was up in New Mexico last week.
Okay, there's a couple of responses. One is on my list of my to-do list earlier, one of them was to get energy drink companies off of college campuses. So I was shocked to find out actually from it is shocking that it is not just Red Bull, actually Monster. I saw a Monster truck outside the UC Berkeley campus. So you have to work through, I think it should be done through college campus, university presidents. I mean, what are they doing allowing these products to be given away? So absolutely, the marketing of these soft drinks on campus needs to be dealt with. There are a couple of lawsuits pending against Red Bull. Red Bull, I mean, by far is the most irresponsible company in this realm. Their promotion, they have these big events they call Flug Tag, where they have these flying machines contests, and then they have set up a booth with free, unlimited Red Bull and vodka. And there was this horror story that happened in Arizona a couple years ago where a 20-year-old got drunk, left the premises, got in his car, and killed a motorcycle cop. This was in Tempe. And so there's a lawsuit right now pending against Red Bull for that activity. So yes, we need to deal with Red Bull. It's a little bit tricky, though, from a legislative standpoint. I encourage local counties where they can to try and look at the option of banning the mixing. And I've heard of other countries that do this, but what that results in, where a bar has to, will give you the can of Red Bull and the shot of vodka separately. I mean, then you can, so it's a little tricky to ban mixing. I mean, but instead we have to go after these companies and definitely educate about these highly caffeinated soft drinks and get kids to stop thinking about, drinking a beverage as a drug.
Thank you very much.
Right, thank you.